Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your infection prevention conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance, please press star and then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Teri Strop.
Thank you, operator. And thank you to everyone who has joined us this afternoon on today's call. We have quite a number of folks that have dialed into the call. And on the line with me today in the moderator room is Gina Shin from Greater New York, and I'm sure you have all been receiving many emails from Gina, and will continue to receive many more from her. Rafael Ruiz from Greater New York, who will be doing the data analysis for us. Dr. Brian Cole and Dr. David Kalfi are experts on call for this initiative. And at this point, I just want to highlight that today we will be discussing the data definitions and some revisions that we have made to the data collection form. And the first data collection form and team report for the month of March was actually due on April 30th, and we still have quite a number of forms that are outstanding. So if you have not submitted that data, we really do request that you get it into us as soon as possible, because it really holds up us getting reports back to the other folks in the collaborative that have already submitted their data. So that said, I'd like to turn the call over to Dr. Cole and Dr. Kalfi to chime in. And we would like to talk about the progress of piloting hospitals with the checklist and go through that tool with all of you. Dr. Cole?
Okay, I think we will probably start with the data definitions.
Okay, that's fine.
So everyone hasn't, if they can open up the algorithm. Because what we found out, we were getting a lot of questions. I think folks were having some difficulty differentiating your facility-associated C. difficile with healthcare facility-associated C. difficile, meaning that if somebody was in a healthcare facility and they got C. difficile, it may have been your C. difficile, it could have been my C. difficile, it could have been someone else's C. difficile. So to clarify, we revised this definition. What we are really expecting folks to record in the data when they call something a facility-associated C. difficile case would be a case of C. difficile from your institution. And that really is really the biggest change. We didn't change in terms of what that meant. So to reiterate, a patient classified as having your facility-associated C. difficile is defined as a patient who develops diarrhea more than 48 hours after admission to your hospital, or who has symptoms that develop within 48 hours after discharge from your facility. And then the remainder of the definitions regarding possible C. difficile have remained the same, and that looking at continuation of the same case, recurrent, or a new case after 8 weeks, that has remained the same. The other change in the algorithm had to do with transfers, because everyone was actually doing 150% and tracking down where folks came from. So to try to clarify the definition for transfers, if a patient is transferred from another facility to your facility with the diagnosis of C. difficile, or with any symptoms of diarrhea diagnosed as C. difficile within 48 hours, this would be a non-facility-associated case of C. difficile. So I think this would be the first place to stop to make sure that we're all on the same wavelength. So are there any questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key at this time. Once again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key.
Brian, do you want to just comment on a few of a little bit of the discussion that we had at the steering committee in regard to some of the definitions, in case folks have some of those same challenges or questions? as far as the semantics?
I mean, I think the two things that we really that I remember speaking about a lot really was, really had to do with say a nursing home or some chronic care facility, and that's where I think people were getting a little confused on transfers. So. And so someone would come to my facility, say from a nursing home. They would be diagnosed with C. difficile, but it actually wasn't my case. People were initially recording that as a facility-associated C. difficile case when it actually should have been a non-facility-associated. And in the data entry, obviously, if you're able to find out where the person came from, there is a column for name of transferring facility. The other question that came up, again, just to make sure that everyone understands, the folks that should be entered into this database per reporting period would really be anybody diagnosed with C. difficile using our definitions of what a diagnosis is. So that's a positive result for lab assay. But you really want to make sure you have facility-associated, non-facility-associated, and also possible facility-associated. And I think those were really the biggest questions. To reiterate, this is just in adults. This is not in pediatrics. And this also is only adults who are admitted to the facility.
I think one of the things that came up was they also have to have diarrhea.
Yes. So any questions?
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. We have a question from Catherine Shannon.
Hi, it's Kathy. There's two parts to this question. It's regarding the Excel spreadsheet. If you would eliminate on the C. difficile case status column, if you would eliminate the blank that's there, because I think that's confusing me a little bit because I tend to leave it blank rather than filling it in. So if I didn't have the option of having it blank, it would be okay. It would be better. And if the top of the column, you would put a little explanation to say the C. difficile case status is for your facility only, that may make it a little easier for us to remember as we're putting that in, that it's just for us. It's not from another healthcare facility.
The second part, I think, is easy. I'm not sure what you mean by blank.
Well, if you click into it, there's five places you can click into: healthcare facility associated, possible healthcare facility associated, non-healthcare, and recurrent. And there's a blank space also.
This is Rafael. Yeah, that's correct. There is a blank. The reason that blank is there is so that way when you open the form, there isn't already something in that field. For example, it would not automatically read healthcare associated or, as it reads now, facility associated infection. So the blank, I would like to leave the blank simply because I don't want to put something into that cell before you put your data in.
Okay.
I want you to see a blank cell so that you put whatever you need to put there versus altering what I have left there.
Okay. Can I ask another question about recurrence?
Sure.
If it's a recurrent from a nursing home and they come to us and develop it, say, 10 days into admission, say they had it in the nursing home 3 weeks before, do we even mention it at all, or do we just put it in there as a recurrent? How do we mention that?
So the person, just so that I understand, the person was at another facility.
Right.
Had diagnosed C. difficile. Mm-hmm. It's within 8 weeks, and they come to your facility.
Yes.
And they're admitted for what?
Fractured hip.
A hip fracture. Do they have diarrhea on admission?
No, they don't.
And then their symptoms develop when?
A week later, 5 to 7 days later.
And they're in the hospital.
Yeah. Do you consider that a recurrence, or is that a new case for us?
Well, based on our surveillance definitions, that would fall within 2 to 8 weeks, correct?
Correct.
After the last specimen that tested positive? So that, to me, would be recurrent, and the way that I'm interpreting it would be a non-facility. I'd be eager to hear what Dr. Kalfi has to say.
That's how I put it down for my paperwork.
I would agree. I think it's great that you're able to know that when they were previously diagnosed. That may be tricky to know sometimes, but I think if you have that information, then absolutely there's no reason to give yourself a new case when it meets the definition for recurrent, even though the first episode was someplace else.
Thank you.
That was a great question.
Thanks.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. Our next question comes from Audrey Adams.
Hi, everyone. I have a question regarding multi-site facilities. And each one has a different, name on the collection data form. So should each one of my sites be as separate hospitals in terms of if we have someone who is going from my Moses division to my Einstein division with C. diff, should I count it as a different facility?
Can you give a concrete example?
Okay. If I have someone here who was diagnosed with C. difficile, has gone home and comes back in within 2 weeks, but goes to Einstein, my other division.
Okay.
Should that be counted, as a totally new person from a different facility, non-Einstein facility associated, I would think.
So they're at, just where were they initially, Audrey?
They're at my Moses division.
So they're at Division A, they go home, and then they go to a different division? And they get C. diff, or they have C. diff?
Yes. They already had it, at my A hospital.
Okay, so then it would be, I think, analogous to the previous question. If it's 2 weeks or less, it's a continuation of the same case. So that's not your case. Recurrent, it would be non-facility if it's 2 to 8 weeks. And if it's more than 8 weeks, it becomes the last receiving facility's case.
But actually, I believe with the multi-hospital sites, they each will have their separate denominator database that we'll be using to calculate. So my thinking would be that these are different hospital sites.
That's correct.
Right. Now, I have another situation I wanted to bring in regards to the form. My data person had mentioned to me that we have the reporting period listed for each case on our form. And she has to constantly type in, a place in, like for March 31, 2008, all the way down each time separately. My question was, I find that looking at the form, it would help if I was able to identify the different units in the hospital where my cases are occurring. When I do a printout of the collection data form, I have no idea where these patients have been housed.
There are fields to the right of the data collection form where you have open alphanumeric field.
Okay.
You can enter that there.
Okay. My
and that would be used by you. It wouldn't be going to Greater New York.
My question was, rather than using that, because on the top of our page it says reporting period March 08. So rather than us having to constantly type in March all the way down the line, which is required right now, why couldn't we just make a new column? We take out the reporting period column that we have on the form and place there hospital unit.
This is Rafael. So the way the form is structured right now, that wouldn't be advisable. The reason is this. The field that is reporting period at the top of the form,
uh-huh.
Basically, the macro uses that as the filter designator. So, for example, the macro will automatically look to that field and say, okay, what date do I see? March 2008. Very good. I'm going to now go down into the data fields and pluck out all cases with a reporting period of March 2008, and then it will take those cases and create the new file for you. Now, if you don't want to sit there and type in 3108 every single time, you are free to write it in once and then copy and paste for, you know, however many cases you had. So you enter your first case for March, and you would type in 3108, and then say you had 20 cases that month.
Yes.
You would simply copy the 3108 and then highlight the reporting period column for all cases in that month and then paste, and that's perfectly acceptable. The field will accept that as long as it's in the same 3108 format. That will be fine. The data validation is specific to the input, so if you input exactly what it's expecting, you can go ahead and copy and paste, and that should speed things up for you. I would just ask that, you know, you be careful, because if you do have multiple months' worth of data on the form, you know, just be careful that you're only copying, pasting the appropriate cases, because you can't overwrite dates that are already there. That would be my only caution.
Very good. Okay, thank you. So I'll take Brian's advice and then and use the other column to locate my unit.
That's correct. And again, that will not come to Greater New York. That's automatically filtered out.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
Also, Audrey, for the reporting period, I just, you know, you can, I mean, Raphael referred to it as copy and paste. You can also just drag it down. You don't have to keep on entering.
That's correct, too. Yes, absolutely.
Very good. Thanks. I'll let her know that. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key. Our next question comes from Ms. Bolin Reardon.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? Just for clarification purposes, we're not reporting community-acquired C. diff. Patients coming in from the community, we're not reporting that to Greater New York.
If they're not admitted to your hospital?
If they are admitted to my hospital.
If they are admitted, you are reporting that, and under, where is it? Sorry. Under where we're saying C. difficile case status, that would be a non-facility associated.
Be a non-facility associated. Okay, thank you. That's me.
I'm showing no further questions from the phone lines at this time.
Okay, great. So we went over the definitions. We went over the data collection, and I'm sure as we continue to go on, we're going to have some more ways to make this hopefully easier for everybody. The next part really would be submitting data. So for the folks that have not submitted data, it would be interesting to hear why data has not been submitted yet for March, to find out if you're having some difficulties just in terms of going through the process to get it to Raphael.
I'll go first. This is David Kelly from Mount Sinai. We have our data ready to submit. We have just been having a few issues with getting approval from our IRB to send the data to Greater New York. So they don't have an issue with the actual data collection. It's the sharing of data with an outside agency. I think it's going to work out fine. It's just taken a little longer than we would have hoped.
So other folks, is it similar IRB issues or just in the process still of getting the data? If no one wants to volunteer, that's okay besides Dr. Kelsey.
We have a question or a comment from Catherine Shannon.
Okay.
Brian, I have the data here, but I had to clean it up again because of the discussions that we had last week, and it took me many hours to make sure that my C. diff case status was correct, and I had to change a few because I was giving you a misdiagnosis. So by tomorrow or the next day, I'll be sending, as soon as I can figure out again how to recopy it again and get it through, and I'll get it to Raphael.
Okay, so good. So data cleanup, that's always good. Any other folks want to volunteer?
So a question or a comment, please press the 1 key. We We have a question or a comment from Deborah DiDomenico.
Hi. We were having a problem submitting the data as a test data first, and I spoke to Raphael or his associate the other day on Friday. So we're still trying to work it out where in the system why he's not getting the data. We did a test data first to send it. So I need to speak to Raphael on a one-to-one, but we'll get it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, just email me and we'll find a convenient time. This goes for everyone. I'm always happy to speak to you about any questions or, you know, if you have concerns, you know, please feel free. Email me, call me, either is fine.
Thank you.
And Raphael, I believe there was going to be a way where you were going to let us know when you received our data.
That's correct. In fact, I just finished compiling a list of those facilities and the months of data which I've received. So I just finished putting that into a nice little report today, and we will get that out to hospitals and say, you know, Hospital X, we have this month of data from you. Thank you very much. And then, you know, hopefully I think I will try to be more expedient in the future, but I was a bit overwhelmed with the amount of data that came in from the various collaboratives over the last few weeks, so I fell a little behind. I apologize.
Okay. So for those of you that obviously IRB issues will be worked through, the cleanup of the data will be worked through. Obviously, it sounds like there's just some electronic submission data issues also. But I think everyone should really, as a goal, try to have this all to Raphael by Friday.
And, Brian, do you mind if I say a few words about the data I have received so far?
If there's something to say about the data that you've received so far, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that there have been a few hospitals which have forgotten that the form has a patient days field at the top of the form. That's a very important field because, you know, obviously that's needed to calculate rates. So, and, you know, just remember those numbers, that number will change on a monthly basis. So, you know, just pay attention to that. Also, I've noticed that there have been some errors in the years. So, for example, a few hospitals had patients admitted in 1964 and other very odd dates. So for the forms that I have received, it has been very obvious what those dates should have been, but I would prefer not to infer. If there could be maybe some sort of proofreading mechanism there. Other than that, most of the forms that I've received have been, you know, well filled out, and, you know, there are a few missing fields, but that was to be expected, and I just want to, you know, for those of you who have submitted data, just say thank you.
Okay, before we move on, any last questions about data submission or definitions?
We do have a question from Richard Smith.
Hi. One quick question about the definition. Sometimes you're getting patients either from home or from different facilities with abdominal discomfort. It sounds like they might be on the way of developing some kind of diarrhea. Maybe 2 to 3 days into the admission, something finally comes forward. It's collected and sent. Is that still considered a hospital-acquired facility reportable case or possibly community-acquired?
I mean, the way our definitions read now, if somebody has abdominal complaints but doesn't have diarrhea,
mm-hmm.
but then develops diarrhea more than 48 hours after admission,
okay.
That would be classified as a facility-associated case.
All right.
doesn't mean we can't discuss. But what we try to do with symptoms, because that can be sometimes very subjective, mm-hmm. and even diarrhea obviously can sometimes be very subjective, we try to keep this as objective as possible.
Okay.
David, your thoughts?
Yeah, I could argue both sides of that story, I think. But I think you're right. We need to come up with something that's fairly objective that everybody can do rather than allowing too much leeway. So I think that's probably the most accurate way to do it.
I think at this point what I would prefer to do is sort of stick to the way we have this definition. And what we can do is refer your question to the steering committee. And if other folks want to comment in the meanwhile, they can send their comments to either Raphael or to Gina.
Thank you.
That sound okay with everybody?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
There are no further questions from the phone lines.
Okay, so the next part of this is going to really deal with the environmental checklist and the bundle monitoring tool. And those were included in your attachments. And they're being piloted right now. Is that correct, Raphael and Gina?
That's correct.
What we try to do, you know, for folks who want to pilot it now, I think that's great, and you just need to let us know. My own preference would be first to get the data collection part under everybody's belts, and for those of us that sort of have worked through the data collection, you know, that would be the perfect place to sort of try the bundle monitoring. And the environmental checklist. But to really just go through them very quickly on the bundle, it's also going to be in an Excel spreadsheet. And Raphael, I think, has done a great job in making a lot of things just a drop down. So a lot of it is going to be some clicking and probably some dragging. And we really have tried to make this as easy as possible. And in addition to piloting the form, what we're trying to pilot also is the feasibility of making five really patient observations per week, which comes out to about 20 per month. And, you know, my guess is we're going to work through this month, and I don't know at the last steering committee, did we come up with a time to sort of start that we wanted to move this forward?
I don't think so.
At this point, you know, my guess is we would probably start moving this part of this forward in July. So there'll be more on that. I would ask everybody, though, to really start taking a look at these forms to realize, if you haven't already, what's going to be expected. I think the bundle form is an easier thing to look at. The environmental form, there's actually going to be two parts to it, and it can be, you know, a little bit cumbersome, but it's going to be a form that's collected by your housekeeping folks, and then it's going to be aggregated by, my guess, your infection control folks, and that ultimately the aggregate data will be what's sent to the collaborative. And the reason that I would ask you to look at the form if you haven't already, there's lots of stuff on it, anywhere from hand hygiene, putting on personal protective equipment, disinfection of a variety of surfaces with bleach-containing products, damp dusting, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know if anybody, at least on this end first, has anything to add on these forms. And what we're hoping would be at least for the environmental / housekeeping folks, they would do two observations per week and one terminal cleaning per month. So if there are no questions on this part, I'm going to turn this over to Gina for her to talk about deliverables.
We do have a question from Catherine Shannon.
Brian, can you repeat what you just said? Did you say two observations per week and then one terminal cleaning? But I thought Terry just said five per week.
All right, there's two things. So for the environmental checklist, it's two daily cleanings, so routine cleanings per week, and one terminal cleaning per month. For the bundle, that would be five observations per week. If I misspoke, I apologize.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Brian. So that's 10 a week of the daily observations for environmental services?
No.
Two a week.
Two a week. So you're going to have basically for a four-week month, you're going to have eight daily cleanings, because that's two per week, and one terminal cleaning.
Okay. Thank you.
That would be nine entries.
Thank you.
There are no further questions from the phone line.
Okay. Thanks, Brian, for that update and for the very helpful questions that each of you have asked, because the more we can ask these questions and identify some of the challenges we each have with our own interpretation of the data collection elements, it's very, very helpful. So at this point, we want to talk about some of the deliverables, and some of them are due on May 28th, and they will go to Gina Shin at Greater New York Hospital Association, gmyha.org. And one of those deliverables is actually for us to help you identify what type of training programs we need to assist you with for your housekeeping and environmental engineering staff and others. So we are asking that if you could share with us the number of housekeepers you have on staff. And that's the full number. We don't care if they're full-time, part-time, evenings, weekends, nights, or per diem. The goal is to engage each of these housekeepers at some point in the terminal cleaning process so that they really understand how to clean the room. And we will use that checklist as the training tool for observational purposes to go through each of the areas that need to be cleaned, the dilution of how they use the bleach, and how often they should be doing the cleanings in these areas. Once we have those numbers, we can help identify a work plan illustrating the number of days it will take to complete the training and competencies at each of your facilities. So if you have 10 housekeeping staff, and I know that's a very small number, but I'm just using it as an example, we want to make sure all 10 of those staff participate in at least one terminal cleaning process. And that process would be then documented on the terminal cleaning form. And you could then use it as a tool for your Joint Commission surveys that they've gone through this terminal cleaning and that they have demonstrated competencies. We do believe that in some cases you may have two housekeepers working together for the sake of efficiency to make sure everyone gets through the training, or maybe even more. What do you think, Brian or David?
In terms of?
It's fine if they have multiple people working on the terminal cleaning at one time, right?
Yes, because, I mean, we have three actually working together in some cases on busy days,
right,
to get things going.
And the goal would be to have their department head or someone in infection control to actually observe them and complete that form. Because just because it's on the form doesn't mean they will necessarily know how to adequately clean the room using the bleach products. And before we go on, I just would like to open the line to hear from everyone on the line. Is this feasible? What type of barriers would you anticipate moving forward with this? Have you all adopted the use of the bleach products for the terminal cleaning and the daily cleaning of the C. difficile patients? And if not, what are your barriers and how can we as collaborative leaders help you overcome them?
I just have one question regarding the number of housekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
You want that broken down by supervisors versus, I'll say, housekeeper?
I'm not sure, Brian. I would have to defer to the folks on the call to figure that out. My sense is we're just trying to get a sense so that we can assist each of the hospitals with their work plan. but we will not be developing each hospital's work plan. So how the hospitals want to roll out that training will be up to each hospital. Our interest is more when can we anticipate that this training will be complete in the collaborative, so that all collaboratives will have completed this training, all collaborative hospitals will have completed this training with all of their housekeeping staff by, say, August 1. Is that feasible?
I mean, my preference, if possible, when you talk about housekeepers, if you can, just break it down to, say, your director, you know, assistant director, number of supervisors, and the number of actual housekeepers, because the actual housekeepers are the ones really, I mean, supervisors work. I'm not saying supervisors don't work, but the housekeepers really are going to be the ones that I think are going to be most involved with the work plan.
Although the supervisors should understand the work plan so that they can assess competency. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. Really a key point in this initiative, making sure that at a minimum everyone knows how to terminally clean the room, and then we'll talk about the daily cleaning. So, operator, if you could open the lines, and we would like to at least hear a quick comment from each hospital on the line.
You'd like all lines to be open at once?
No, thank you. One at a time.
We have a question or comment from Denise Naval.
Hi, Denise.
Hi, this is Denise Naval from Huntington Hospital. I had started a mandatory education program for all our housekeepers and nursing assistants.
Okay.
So I have that going, and I'm in the process of it right now, using the sheet.
Oh, great.
And I made a little packet of information for them, reviewing the signage and, you know, everything.
So, Denise, how will you assess their competency? Will you be following through with them?
Well, I'm having the supervisors, you know, follow. I don't know if they're going to be able to get everybody, but they're sending me in the sheets that they have observed of, you know, finished people who have done the either daily cleaning or terminal cleaning, and I have, you know, we started that process.
Okay, and hopefully if we lay out the timeline, our goal really is to make sure everyone is observed and the competency is observed over a period of time.
I included the nursing assistants also because they fill in if housekeeping or whatever can't, you know, get there at that time.
Okay, great. So that's helpful for anyone on the line. You all know within your own facility what staff is part and parcel to this terminal cleaning process or room turnover. Thank you.
Okay.
We have a question or comment from Ken Stern.
Hi, Montana Hospital, Lou Giustiniano at Aramark Building Services. We have a total of 564, 68, you know, somewhere that about EVS housekeeping staff. And then an additional 44 managers and assistant managers that oversee that 564. We already have in place a training program that addresses terminal cleaning and daily cleaning. What we've done was, as the folks have spoken already, is expanded a little bit on it using the checklist and some of the things we've added and a few things we've removed from our current practice. But using that as the tool, that's what we're doing to refine terminal cleaning and daily cleaning.
Specifically for C. diff, right?
Just specifically for C. diff. Now, the August 1st deadline is ambitious, but we're going to try to meet that number, and I'll have a better feel for it as the weeks go by in terms of getting 560-somewhat people and 44 assistant managers and managers all trained on the terminal cleaning.
Yeah, I would imagine in your case it is very, very ambitious.
Yeah, it will be, but we will try what we can do, and I'll have a better feel for it as the weeks go on.
That's fabulous. I do appreciate you speaking up. Do you have any challenges with the staff and comments from them about using the bleach products?
No, we currently have a 1-10 product that we use at the hospital here. We're looking at new products, you know, just to try to make it a little bit easier in terms of a wipe or a rag versus, you know, the spray mechanism that we have now. Our transport department here also, and we have people here representing the transport department, will speak a little bit about that as well, but they have a couple of challenges with the type of wipe that we're going to use to help, you know, the mode of transportation vehicles used to transport our isolation patients. But other than that, the only obstacle that we've come across, and it's a consistent theme, is being notified as to who is the C. diff versus any other contact isolation. We find it, and we're approaching it as it doesn't really matter to us, and I'm trying to understand from infection control whether it's even necessary to segregate that population. We attack an isolation room consistently across the board. It doesn't matter to us whether it's the C. diff case or precaution, whatever it is. It's still a terminal clean, and walls get wiped down, the curtains get removed, and then and therefore. So
on all your terminal cleaning and daily cleaning, you use the bleach product for all of the?
No.
That's the differentiating
factor, I guess.
Just the contact
isolation cases, those that are identified as contact isolation rooms, that a patient had, you know, existed in that room that was under precautions.
Right. So the challenge, and this theme has come up a few times already, what type of signage do we need to subtly let housekeeping and others know that this room is actually a C. diff room, which requires the terminal cleaning or the daily cleaning using the bleach products?
I understand what you're saying. So it would be, you know, who would pull the rug out from under us to not tell us that it's a contact isolation room that we're cleaning? That's really not a practice that we have here at Mount Sinai. We know who our isolation patients are and where they are, so we don't have a signage issue. What was a little strange for us was to identify a C. diff, specifically contact isolation, versus any other contact isolation.
Right, and that's exactly what I'm saying. So you have all of your isolation patients. Everyone knows who they are, and you've mastered that identification process. The challenge with the C. diff is to have some type of signage or code on the poster outside the room or in the patient's room that alerts the housekeeping staff that this patient is actually C. diff, so you need to use different cleaning products.
Yeah, hi, this is David Kelfi, also from Mount Sinai. And what we've been doing so far without changing our signage is every day we send an email update to the supervisors in building services that just gives them a list of units and room numbers that are C. diff patients so that they can start to distinguish between the two rather than marking it and on the outside of the room and worrying about issues such as HIPAA problems and putting diagnoses on signs. And worrying about people using signs on different doors than they're supposed to. So we're actually directly identifying the rooms to the supervisors on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a terrific tool that we have with our infection control folks. So we have the heads up already from one night to the next morning who presented throughout the hospital as a C. diff case, and we already know how to approach that.
Thank you. You have a lot of training ahead of you. So next on the line?
Our next question or comment comes from Audrey Adams.
Hello, Audrey.
Hi. Okay, I just wanted to comment. You want to hear from everyone. So at Montefiore, we are using the bleach wipes for our terminal cleaning of our rooms. And we have a new program that's being introduced here at Montefiore. And it has to do with new capacity management. And they have special folks that are being hired to do all of the terminal cleaning, of discharge beds. So this will be a group that, we will be working with. They will be a part of environmental services, but they're specifically being trained to do all of the terminal cleaning of all rooms for discharges. So that group will definitely be trained and will need, to go through all of the competencies, for our C. diff patients. But one of the things that I also, we have a large housekeeping department with quite a few managers here, and I do want to stress the importance of having our leadership environmental services people as a part of our task force. And these are the ones that I feel that we should be training to make sure that they do the monitoring of the housekeeping staff. I think the infection control personnel, we have a lot on our plate right now, and I don't think we should be the overseers of that project. I think we could maybe go to their initial training and make sure everything is in place. But after that, I think we should, work with our environmental managers to ensure that that is their role as a part of this initiative and not, an infection control
practitioner's role, because there's so many things that we're now involved with. I can see this becoming kind of overwhelming at this point.
Any comments, Brian or David? Thanks. Thank you, Audrey.
Welcome.
Next on the line.
Once again, if you have a question or a comment, please press the 1 key. Our next question or comment comes from Brenda Grant.
Hi. I wanted to just say that we do a couple of things. We use the bleach product for all our contact isolation rooms, as the gentleman said they're doing at Mount Sinai. And so they're not really needing to know that it's C. diff because we're using that same product for, and we're cleaning the same way for all of our contact isolation.
Brenda, what hospital are you with?
Stamford in Connecticut. And also, we have signage that we did modify a little bit. It doesn't say C. diff, but we do have hands under running water as a picture, and we have contact precautions, and we have a little C in parentheses, which, and it's a different color, slightly different color, so that it does key people into knowing that this is for C. diff without saying a full, the full thing.
Yeah, that was very nice, Brenda. Actually, Gina will be posting that up on the Jenny site.
Oh, thank you.
Which is great. We appreciate you sharing that with us. And the hand washing actually triggered a reminder to me. Last year, Greater New York and 1199 actually put together a very nice purple poster, and it has a great picture of someone washing their hands. So we may be able to translate that into the poster for the C. diff, because it's a very nice poster, and it's gotten a lot of positive feedback.
Okay.
So thank you, Brenda. We appreciate that.
Okay.
And Brenda, do you see any other challenges with your housekeeping staff, that they don't mind using the bleach at all?
They've been using it. We've been doing that for some time now. So, no, actually, they've been, and it's a prepared product that's in a spray bottle that we purchased that way. They seem to be fine with it.
And how about your transporters? What's their approach?
Well, actually, we have had unit-based transporters, and we're now going to a central transport team. So I'll let you know as we work with them, because we're going to be training them.
Great. And I know when OLM gets on the line, they've instituted a fanny pack with products for their transporters.
Yeah, we're actually discussing that now.
Terrific. Next on the line.
Our next question or comment comes from Valsama Fekel.
Hi. This is Valsama from Winthrop Hospital. Here we planned an education section for the hospital-wide education, and we are also planning the separate session for the hospitality, we call them the housekeeping services. We use a special sign for C. difficile. Any patient identified with C. difficile will place a blue sign so the housekeeping knows that is the room where we had to clean with the bleach. We already use this bleach for the cleaning of the C. difficile rooms. And we also fax a daily sheet with all the identified C. difficile patients to the housekeeping staff. Hello?
Yes. And what's your timeline there?
For the education?
Mm-hmm.
It is scheduled for first week of June.
Okay. And what's your timeline for actually doing an observation with all of the housekeeping staff?
That will be completed by the end of June, we hope.
Okay, great. Operator, before we go on with additional questions, Dr. Cole got disconnected, and he's trying to get back in on the line. And I guess he's having some difficulty, if you can locate him at all.
Okay, one moment. He's reconnected now.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next hospital on the line.
Our next question or comment comes from Deborah DiDomenico.
Hi, Debbie. Debbie?
Sorry, I had it on mute. we've been using the 1 to 10 bleach towelettes for the cleaning of C. diff rooms. That seems to be working well. As far as notification, we do it through a daily email, and our isolation precautions or contact precautions with enteric precautions. So they're a little bit different. That seems to be working out okay. The problem that I have is we had a director of environmental services that left, and he was really involved in this. We are a small institution. I don't know how many employees we have in housekeeping. I will be finding that out. But we have two supervisors, and they work as staff most of the time. I know we looked at their terminal cleaning competencies that needed to be, cleaned up even before the C. diff initiative. So right now what we're doing is myself and my administrator are going to be working with the two supervisors to see, you know, how we can implement this and be able to educate the staff and get buy-in. The other thing is that they just got in $11.99 for our housekeeping people. So I don't know how that's going to impact. We've never had, we had CSEA several years ago, but they voted them out because they really never did anything. So I don't know if that's going to throw us a curveball. But the training we'll hope to do by the end of June, complete everybody.
That's great, Deb. My experiences with $11.99, they've been very much supportive of this approach. So
okay.
I don't think you have any worries there. And many folks on the line are with $11.99.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next on the line?
Our next question or comment comes from Ms. Bolin Reardon.
Yes, Carmel?
Hi, Terry. I had to step out of the room, but you wanted me to comment on the fanny packs that the transporters use?
Just two things. What's your training plan to make sure all of your environmental services staff go through that competency? So getting those numbers to us. And then just make a comment on what products you use in your fanny pack as we explore opportunities to improve cleaning of the stretchers and wheelchairs.
Okay.
And how much the fanny packs cost per pack?
Oh, I have a materials manager in the room. How much do they cost per pack? You don't have it? She doesn't have it off the tip of her. I'm sorry, we don't have that piece.
That's all right. We'll get it out to everyone. And Greater New York can certainly look to see if we can put some group purchasing together for the fanny packs for everyone. I'll have Gina speak to our folks on Ventures, Tim Glennon and others, just like they did for the CLADS kits.
Right. With regard to the education piece, we developed guidelines. We had to have some type of guidelines in place before we do a massive education throughout the building. So our guidelines really are, they focus, it's like a multidisciplinary guidelines. It's for the RNs, PCAs, environmental services, the rehab group, EKG technicians, and so on. So we had to have that first before we, then we developed a PowerPoint presentation so that the educators can take it on the road and we can take it on the road. The educators in our building are going to, they actually are starting tomorrow and are doing a massive education for all the nurses and the PCAs, like on all shifts. And Kathy and I are going to focus on the ancillary group, which includes radiology, respiratory, all ancillary services, of course, environmental group as well. And then Dr. Corpus, our infectious disease physician, is going to educate, attend grand round sessions and educate the physicians and update the physicians. So that we're starting actually, we're really starting that as we speak, that piece of it. With regard to the transporters, this went back to the infection prevention campaign that was run by 1199 in Greater New York at the end of last year, and we looked at some of our prevention pieces, and we looked at the rolling stock, and we said we'd focus on wheelchairs and stretchers. And one of our transporters came up with the idea for the fanny pack and the wipes. And I actually walked around with a transporter, and it took me less than 15 minutes. They have a very a very tough job, very quick, rapid turnaround. So you really need to give them cleaning equipment, but readily available to them, not looking to where the canister is located, the PDI canister is located on the unit. So PDI gave us the fanny pack. We ran a pilot for 2 weeks, and we did a survey afterwards, and we got very favorable results. What's in the fanny pack is PDI individual wipes, germicidal wipes, and if obviously if it's a C. diff patient, then it's the bleach wipes. And we've had great success with it. It's still ongoing. We're the supervisors are making sure that that they're using it. They're making sure that there's turnaround of the product, and that's where we are.
Thank you very much, Carmel. That's helpful. And again, each time we have these calls, I really would love it if you could reach out to your infection prevention coaches if you have had some folks trained in that area, because they can be a great support and great part of the educational process to the other staff members as you move forward with this collaborative. They want their new skill sets to be utilized. Okay, next hospital on the line.
Again, if you have a question or a comment, please press the 1 key. Our next question or comment comes from Karen Stern.
Hi, again, it's Lou Justiniano from Mount Sinai. Just to expand and piggyback off of the transportation piece, one of the other things that we've been focusing a lot of attention on was during the last couple of weeks now was when our transporters present to the ancillary sites, radiology, CT scan, wherever it is, how those folks handle and deal with the cases that are going into their exam rooms and then turning that room over and having it ready and prepared for the next case, whether the compliance rate there was, we were meeting compliance rates and getting that terminally cleaned. I just want to put that out there, that we're still having some ongoing dialogue with our folks here as to how they protect, defend, and deal with, our isolation cases once they present to them on their units.
Very much.
I'm showing no further questions or comments.
Are there any hospitals on the line that we have not heard from?
We have a question in the queue from Janine Waltman.
Hi, Janine from Glen Cove. I just wanted to, we did nursing grand rounds, and I did the C. diff and the C. diff initiative as education for the staff to start the kickoff of the education. We also, we use a two-contact sign, so contact for the regular MDROs and then a special one for C. diff. I also do a isolation list to the environmental staff, and the environmental staff has used your checkoff list as an educational piece to the staff and are using that to make sure that they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing. So we're moving forward with that.
Thank you very much. Do you see it a challenge to get all your environmental services staff up and running with the competency?
No, I don't think so, because we've been working towards developing, actually, just even within the system, I know that they're working on developing competencies for the supervisors and then also for the staff. But they used, like I said, the tool to review everything with all the staff, and the supervisors have started monitoring to make sure that they're doing that. We haven't formally, counted, but this is our start to our practice session, so to speak.
That's great. Thank you so much, and I love the nursing grand rounds.
Yeah.
Very helpful. Do you think, Janine, when you did the nursing grand rounds that this information was new to some staff, or do you believe they really understood the cleaning process? And
I think they really did understand the depth of the problem and understanding the you know, and again, the nurses aren't really doing the cleaning per se, but just the whole concept of it, yes, I think that they did understand. And there are a lot of nurse educators in the audience so that we can I can use them to help reinforce the appropriate behavior and protocols.
Terrific. Thank you. Next hospital on the line.
Once again, if you have a question or a comment, please press the 1 key.
Operator, is Lenox Hill Hospital on the line?
Lenox Hill Hospital, if you could please press the 1 key. We have Veronica Mataprasad.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, we're on the line, and we do have to submit our data. We will get that done. We should be able to get that done by the end of this week.
Okay, and also, what's your strategy for educating the environmental services staff?
We have been doing in services with our housekeeping staff. Still have a few more to go. We keep getting new staff, and we're working on that.
Okay, so, and are you using the training checklist?
Yes.
Okay. And again, I encourage everyone to make sure you keep good records of that competency list because it will be very beneficial to you for a Joint Commission site visit or even a State Department of Health or CMS site visit. You do want to track this work that you're doing and make sure you get credit for it.
Okay, thank you.
Any other hospital on the line? NYU?
NYU, if you could please press the 1 key. I'm showing no further questions or comments in the queue.
Okay, so those who we did not get to on this call, we will follow up with you specifically on the next call and give you a little bit of time to prepare and begin working on your work plan for educating all of the housekeeping and transporter staff. In the meantime, May 28th is the target date to get your numbers to Gina so that your timeline for getting this training and competency complete can be put in place, and it will be a deliverable of the collaborative. Next, Gina has been posting quite a bit of information up on the Jenny website. If anyone on the line has not been able to access that site yet because of technical difficulties, please give Gina or myself a call, and we will help you navigate your way through the system. More importantly, this site is really valuable as you begin to do your data collection because you can actually post questions, and with our expert advisory panel, we can get you quick answers to your questions so that you can continue on your data collection efforts and not have any long gaps in the process. So please use that site for your questions, and we will continue to post best practices and posters. Like Gina mentioned, we will be getting up Stanford's poster, which seems to be one of the better ones out there. The login for the site is hospital quality, all one word, all lowercase, so everyone can get access to it. I would encourage you to share this access with your nursing staff and your environmental services staff and transporters so that they start to really understand the big picture, that this is really a regional initiative to help eliminate C. difficile in all hospitals, not only in your own hospital. We had a little bit of discussion already on the signs that the hospitals are using. Continue to send your signage to Gina if you think it's really of good quality and that we could utilize it. In the meantime, Gina and I are meeting with our public relations staff on Friday, and we will try to design and put together some mock-ups for signage or patient education brochures, share it with the advisory committee, and then come up with some type of product that you could all print up for your own hospitals on your own. We'll also continue to reach out to Betsy McCoy because she did mention she wanted to put together a patient education brochure. I also, in that vein, as we can talk about the education, you may want to start thinking about how do you get your patients to begin washing their hands before meals. I know little wipes on the tray are probably a waste of money because some will use it, some won't, and then they get thrown out. But whether it's just basic communication to the patient or giving the patient a hot should begin thinking about the practice of getting patients to wash their hands before meals. Then final two topics. During our advisory committee the other day, we talked about the potential of recruiting some type of interns. A few hospitals have been successful in doing this. Greater New York may have an intern that we can utilize part-time and hopefully share with some of you to go on site and do some hand hygiene observation or room cleaning observation for the C. diff patients and collect some data. We'll be talking further with the advisory panel on what that data collection tool should look like. But in the meantime, I think you all have local high schools or undergraduate schools or students coming home from the summer. Some of those students are very, very ambitious. Their parents are after them to get into the best schools in the country upon graduation. And having some good data and writing a paper in partnership with the local hospital could be very beneficial to you and to them as well. It could be a win-win type activity. And it would free you up from doing a lot of this data collection. At least over the summer, it can get you started. Brian, Dr. Kelsey, any comments on that one?
We're also using medical students, nursing students, and medical residents to supplement this.
That's great.
Because we realize that this really, you know, I got cut off a little bit when Audrey was speaking, but this really is a lot of work for, if you're going to say this is solely infection control.
And I think the value not of using the students is not only to collect the data, but it almost becomes educational to the staff around the students. For the medical and nursing students, they're learning as they're doing it, and I believe then they will be incorporating those practices into their lifetime of professional practice. But when you're using non-professionals, when you're using the high school or undergraduate students, they have the opportunity to be on the unit. Once you or Greater New York trains them up and educates them, their presence on the units, again, will reinforce practices and education. So I strongly encourage everyone on the call to do that and develop a partnership with your local high schools or colleges to really make this a community-based effort. And they would also have the opportunity then to work with your nursing home partners once we engage in that part of the collaborative. So other topics, finally. National APEC is conducting a survey starting today on the incidence of CDAD in the country. If you're interested in participating, you can access the survey at www.apec.org. And Gina also sent you a link in the email that announced this conference call. So it's an online survey. It's fairly simple and quick. Our next conference call will be on June 4th at the same time. And finally, just if anyone has any other comments.
Again, if you have a comment, please press the 1 key.
Okay, again, I want to thank everyone for being on the line. Just remember, if you have not submitted your data, it was due on April 30th. We will be sending notifications out to each of you weekly until we do receive all of the data. I think once you get in the habit of submitting it timely, it will get a little easier. We recognize the fact that the technology is new to many of you, use of Excel is new to many of you, and confirming what those data definitions has also been a challenge. So as we move further along in this process, we will be very, very strict with the timeline for submission for this data. Remember, the New York State Department of Health is sponsoring this collaborative. It's under a grant by them, and they're very, very interested in the incidence and prevalence of CDAD in hospitals so that we can continue to look for opportunities to eliminate it to the extent possible. So please get your data into us. And if you have any questions or problems with the submission, Raphael and Gina and I are always available to you, and we're more than happy to help you move that process forward. And the May 28th date is, please put it on your calendar, and that's to begin the work plan for the environmental staff. Any other questions? Hey, for those of you who were in the CLABS collaborative and are on the call, remember, if you haven't submitted your final CLABS data, please do so. Raphael is putting together the final reports. Once we receive all of your data, we will be reviewing what your current rates are and, if necessary, doing some additional target interventions with you, your hospital, to help get those numbers down. I know a few of you have called to tell us that your rates are starting to go creep up a bit and you need us to come on a site visit, and we're more than happy to do so. Once we have the final report, we'll be sending that data out to all of you that participated in CLABS and to your executive leadership to utilize. And just keep in mind that although we are transitioning out of the data collection process, it does not mean we will not continue to work and support you on the CLABS, because it's very, very important, had so many successes in this area, not to lose sight of those successes. And that data will be publicly reported on January 1 of 2009. So we don't want any surprises to find out that CLABS hospitals are not doing as well as non-CLABS collaborative hospitals. Brian, any comment on that?
No, this is just one big steamroller that's coming down on us. And the more that we get ahead of the curve on all these infections, and not just reducing them in the short term, but really putting processes in place to maintain the gains and really, get these infections to go away, it's going to serve us well and obviously serve our patients well.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to be on the call, and we look forward to hearing from you on June 4th or sooner if you have any questions. And have a great week. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the conference, and you may now disconnect.